Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Let's ride.
For the words that are recited before each and every game here at Dodger Stadium, take it away, Finn.
It's time for Dodger baseball.
The Inclined Dodgers podcast live, 6 a.m. local time Pacific, as the Los Angeles Dodgers are battling the San Diego Padres, and they're currently in the top of the ninth inning. Who else got up super early like myself to watch this Dodgers game? I'm an absolute mess right now, but I'm definitely enjoying myself. We'll have Jake Reiner join on in a little bit. Let me know how you're doing in the comments. If you're new to the Inclined Dodgers podcast, make sure to hit that subscribe button, hit that like button while you're at it. We're going to dive into game one of the Los Angeles Dodgers that they're currently leading 5-2, top of the ninth inning. Kike Hernandez is at the plate on a 3-2 count. So just waiting for Evan Phillips to close this one out, and then we can kind of recap all the action. Dodgers definitely got off to a slow start, but the bats came alive definitely in the eighth inning. So thank goodness. We definitely want to start 1-0 and not 0-1 to the San Diego Padres. Nice. Kike just worked a walk, so we got the bases loaded. Maybe it's just me, but it seems like there's no elevation or altitude in Korea whatsoever. Just a lot of dead balls. But yeah. 5-2 right now, Dodgers are on top. It was disappointing, to say the least, with the bats at first. Felt like we couldn't get anything done with runners in scoring position. I think they were 0 for 7 at one point, left 14 runners on base, but they've started to come alive. Thank goodness. Got Gavin Lux now at the dish, who's 0 for 4, but he's got a run scored and broke Jake Cronenworth's glove. So he's got that resume under his belt, and he didn't have any errors so far today. So he's looked good at second base. Thank goodness. And how about Mookie Betts? He's looked pretty flawless at the shortstop position early on in this 2024 campaign. Well, obviously, we still have 161 more games to go. But the fact that the Dodgers didn't really have any errors on defense today, good sign coming. Tyler Glasnow early on should have let that one grounder go to Muncy, kind of allowed a run to score at that point when the bases were loaded and nobody out. But, I mean, how about Tyler Glasnow today? Didn't even have really good command of his stuff, and yet still only allowed two runs, went five innings. Would have been good enough for a win if the Dodgers had provided enough run support. But I was impressed with Glasnow. Didn't really have command of the curveball, but the slider looked filthy. 97, 98 miles per hour, pretty consistently on his fastball, had a lot of life to it. So, good acquisition so far. Really impressed with Tyler Glasnow. And this Dodgers bullpen up to this point has just been flawless. People had concerns about Ryan Brazier. Looked a little off this spring. Looked like vintage Ryan Brazier coming out of the prior lab in the second half for the Dodgers in the 2023 season. Daniel Hudson, who's had to fight his way back on to make the major league squad, he looked great. Joe Kelly, he looked awesome. So the final test is to see what Evan Phillips looks like. Unless Gavin Lux breaks out right now and makes this more than a three-run lead, we'll see Evan Phillips in a safe situation, so that's going to be cool. But yeah, if anyone's following along right now on YouTube, feel free to drop some comments. If you're following along on X, give us a follow there. But yeah, this is Kevin Klein speaking. Been up since 3 a.m. Just watching the Dodgers. Oh, yeah. Oh. And he flew out. Okay. So Evan Phillips for the save it is. All right, so I'm just trying to set up some things on YouTube real quick. Bear with me for one moment as I get this set up. But what are your guys' thoughts on Shohei Ohtani? Absolutely delivered, did he not? Shohei Ohtani reached base numerous times, drove in a run, had a base hit as well, stole a base. Shohei Ohtani looks lightning fast out there. We had Jose Mota come on the podcast last week, and he told us that Shohei Ohtani, with his speed, he could easily steal 50 bases in a season if he wanted to. And based off everything I've seen, I absolutely buy into that 100%. Shohei might be the fastest Dodger on the team, which is insane because he's also probably our best power hitter. And when he's healthy with the elbow, he's a great pitcher. So outside of not being able to play the field because he's devoted to being a pitcher and a designated hitter, Shohei Ohtani on a normal playing field would be a five-tool player without a doubt. Okay, so I just updated the YouTube. So there we go. I can now be more seamless. Let's see if anyone's following along in the chat. What's up, Trey B? Glad the bats woke up when we needed it. Oh, yeah, me too. It was looking a little rough out there. I know Max Muncy left some runners on. James Outman, Gavin Lux, they all left some runners on. Jason Hayward was able to drive in a run with a sac fly. But five runs against a pretty decent Padres pitching staff, take that every time out. Mookie Betts went 2-for-4 with an RBI. Shohei Ohtani went 2-for-5 with an RBI. Freddie Freeman went 0-for-2, but he had two walks. Will Smith went 1-for-4. Max Muncy 1-for-3 with two walks. Teoscar Hernandez, he went 1-for-5 with two walks. James Outman 1-for-3, two walks. Jason Hayward 0-for-1 with a sac fly. Kike Hernandez came off the bench. He went 0-for-1. With a sac fly and a walk. And Gavin Lux went 0-for-5 with a run, but he also induced some contact to have that one ball break through Jake Cronenworth's glove, and that gave the Dodgers the lead. So the Dodgers overall, I was impressed. They looked very disciplined at the plate. They made Yu Darvish work. Yu Darvish was laboring out there, was only able to go, I believe, 3 2/3 innings. Let me fact check myself. Yep, 3 2/3 innings. Yu Darvish only had three strikeouts. He had three walks. There was one point in the game where the Dodgers could have broken it probably wide open against Yu Darvish in the second or third inning, had the bases loaded. He was able to escape the pressure, get out of the jam. Then the Dodgers kind of were lifeless for the next few innings or so, and then they finally broke it open in the eighth inning. So good to see the Dodgers bats come alive. Pitching looked excellent today. We talked about Tyler Glass. Now he went five innings, only allowed two runs, issued four free passes. He had four walks, I believe. Let me check myself. Yeah, Tyler Glass now had four walks, three strikeouts, only allowed two hits. So Tyler Glass now didn't have command of all his pitches, but still looked relatively good overall. A very impressive Dodgers debut for Tyler Glass now. I mean, if you only give up two runs in five innings, you're going to take that every single time out. No single doubt about it. So good for Tyler Glass now. Really impressed with what he has to offer. Love that fastball velocity. Was able to induce some really nasty swings and misses. Had a few pickle situations where, he got into some trouble and he induced some ground ball double plays. So Tyler Glass now showed he could pitch under pressure. And that's all I can really ask. Evan Phillips so far, he's looked pretty nasty. What's up, Roy Estrada? Good morning to you as well. Go Dodgers. We're just two outs away from starting the season off 1-0, undefeated in the 2024 campaign. Little low there. Also, on that note, you know, Tyler Glasnow, he kind of got screwed because I believe he was facing Manny Machado at one point. 3-0 count, fourth pitch was a clear strike, got called a ball. Faced another Padre, should have been a strike three, got called a ball. So umpire certainly wasn't on his A game to start the game, to say the least, but he seems to have settled in so far in the second half of this ball game. But yeah, there were a few calls that just didn't go the Dodgers' way. I mean, to start the game off, when Mookie Betts reached base, he clearly stole a base and the umpire called it back because I guess he interfered with the play. But Mookie had that base stolen all day and all night. I mean, he could have flown to Korea, or he could have flown from Korea back to Los Angeles, and that catcher still wouldn't have thrown him out. That's how far ahead Mookie Betts was. But whatever. You're going to have calls of sometimes just not go your way, but the Dodgers managed to fight back. Let's see. We're down to the final out. Let's see. We got some comments going. I love to see the chat alive. One critique, I said it last season and this season, Muncy needs to bat 7 through 9. He's not good with runners in scoring position. Might be a little bit of a hot take. I don't know if I would bat Max Muncy down that low in the batting order. I do feel like fifth is a fair spot for him, at least this early on in the season. But yeah, if he can't deliver with runners in scoring position, then we definitely will have to have that conversation later on in the year about Max Muncy. But that's the ball game. Evan Phillips, clean 1-2-3. Dodgers are officially 1-0 in the Shohei Ohtani era. The top of the three came through. Love to see it. So cameras are all on Shohei Ohtani right now, which they should be because he's now the face of the Dodgers. I want to hear your guys' reaction. What do you guys think? Are you happy with this win? Was there anything that you think they should have improved upon? Let me know. Just letting a few more people know that the podcast is live.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jake Reiner will be hopping on shortly. So we'll get your guys' thoughts on the Dodgers' first win of the season, live in Korea, 1-0, 5-2 victory. Los Angeles Dodgers are on top of the world. Okay, so I'm dialed in. Let's do this. Once again, if you don't know who this is, I'm Kevin Klein speaking, and you are listening to the Inclined Dodgers podcast. We are presented by TickPick and FanSided. If you are new to the YouTube live stream, well, hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. I'm a little crazy, folks, because I woke up at 2:30 a.m. I got like 5 hours of sleep. I got to go back to sleep eventually. Got to start my full day at work. And here we go. Steve A, 1-0, baby. Absolutely. Nando 390. Fourth place Padres. Yeah, Padres are in last place officially. So Dodgers on top, Padres at the bottom. That's the way it should be. Roy Estrada saying that ESPN tried to be fair and showed the 10 Padres fans, but Dodgers rule the world. It definitely looked like this was a Dodgers home game, even though that the Dodgers were ruled as the road team today. I didn't even listen to the ESPN broadcast. I'm honestly done with that trash. Like, I like Carl Ravage as an in-studio host. I think he does a really good job. I used to watch him on Baseball Tonight and all that for years and thought Carl was awesome. But as a play-by-play guy, he just really ain't it. And Eduardo Perez, another guy who's an excellent baseball in-game analyst when it comes to being in the studio. But in terms of play-by-play, Eduardo just really ain't it either. ESPN is good at basketball. They're pretty good at football now. But baseball, they really need to turn their coverage around because it's rough out there with the current broadcast teams that they throw out there. I don't know why there aren't better national broadcast booths outside of Joe Davis and Fox. I think TBS is trash. I'm honestly not really impressed with anyone on Fox other than Joe Davis. Apple was a disaster a couple years ago outside of Steven Nelson. Peacock, I guess, does things now, but like, who's watching games on Peacock? Am I missing anyone else? Probably, but whatever. Cool. So opening day is done. We got another game tomorrow. Probably the big one. Game two, where Yoshinobu Yamamoto will make his Dodgers debut. So once again, rinse and repeat. Got to wake up early for that one because I ain't going to miss that outing. I really want to see how Yamamoto performs in an actual live game setting that counts for something. I felt like during spring training, he showed a lot of flashes of brilliance, and there were times where he got extremely unlucky, if I'm being quite honest. His bat pip was insane. It was like in the low 500s, and usually pitchers should be somewhere between the 200 and 300 mark. So what that tells me is that Yamamoto really just got unlucky with a lot of soft contact. And there was a lot of balls in play that should have been outs, and it just did not go his way. But hey, we're going to see how that goes tomorrow. The Padres lineup definitely was more watered down than I had expected, than I was anticipating. I didn't even know Tyler Wade was on the Padres, yet he seemed to be the most pesky and annoying player tonight. Manny Machado recovering from the elbow surgery. He was their designated hitter, and that definitely kind of came back to bite them because Tyler Wade did have a pretty costly error that resulted in a runner reaching second base, but he did also make one nice diving catch. But, I mean, Profar is out there. Eh. Jake Cronenworth as their three-hole hitter, that doesn't really seem like a recipe for success if Jake Cronenworth is batting in the three-hole for you. Justin Yamas, what is up, buddy? Fanatics made Cronenworth's glove. Just the way things are going for Fanatics, that would not shock me in the very least because that was a very poor quality glove. I've never seen anything like that before where it wasn't even hit that hard and it just somehow tore through Cronenworth's glove. But hey, if it goes in the Dodgers' favor, I'm all about that. So no complaints from me. Dodgers won today 5-2. Evan Phillips got his first save. For anyone hopping in late, I have to say once again that I was really impressed with the Dodgers bullpen. Everyone was pretty much three up and three down. Ryan Brazier looked fantastic. Daniel Hudson, someone that I've just been rooting for the last couple years or so, fighting back from all the knee injuries, signing a minor league deal on a kind of a prove it contract with the Dodgers, made the opening day roster, and then Joe Kelly looked pretty good, and of course Evan Phillips was filthy. So from the starter to the bullpen, everyone did their job. Two runs allowed to the Padres. You're going to take that every time out. Dodgers ended up finishing this game with 5 runs, 7 hits. Here comes Jake Reiner, so let me let him on board. There he is, man. First thing in the morning. What is up, Jake Reiner?
Good morning, Kevin. Wow. It's still pitch blackout, which is crazy. That daylight savings really screwing with us. But, I mean, it was all worth it. I mean, for the first, like, 7 innings, it wasn't worth it. And I was getting really upset that we were going to have a loss and, you know, getting 3 hours of sleep was going to be all for naught. But the Dodgers offense woke up, like you mentioned, in our text exchange, kind of like always. Sometimes they start out of the gate pretty hot, but if the offense is cold through the, you know, first few innings, it continues that way until the late innings and then they come alive. Really, excellent work there from the offense, even though they didn't really hit the ball hard. They put the ball where the fielders weren't and scored some runs and took the lead. But I think what was huge was Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah.
I forget which inning it was. It was either the fourth or the fifth where he loaded the bases with nobody out.
Yep.
And that was the moment. That was the turning point right there to be able to get that double play and only give up one run in that instance was huge because that was the only Padres rally the entire game. So to me, that was pretty much it right there. And then the pitching the rest of the way was elite. This bullpen, as we've previewed, you know, throughout spring training, just on full display, just nails, absolute nails. Great to see Daniel Hudson back on the mound after coming back from, you know, knee problems, and he's had a couple of Tommy John surgeries in his life. So having him back on the mound at age 37, getting outs is great. Joe Kelly back on the mound. Brazier looked great. Evan Phillips looked great. What an opening day. This is incredible.
Yeah, I was briefly touching upon it while the game was near the end and right before you hopped on that Tyler Glasnow didn't even have his best stuff today and he still looked really strong and composed overall. Four walks, one of them was kind of hosed against him. So because the umpire called a clear strike three and I think called it a ball, but he didn't even have command of his curveball today, I guess.
No,
everything else was really working for him. And like that inning you just mentioned, even when he got into trouble, he still looked very composed out there and was able to induce some soft contact and induce some ground ball double plays. But yeah, you mentioned the offense a second ago, so I actually wanted to talk about that right now.
Yeah.
And even though they didn't hit any home runs, even though they only went 2-for-14 with runners in scoring position, they still looked really good today. They put up 5 runs, even when they weren't at their best. And you want to know how many walks they had today? I just looked it up. They had 9 walks.
Yeah. They worked the count. They got on base. This is what the Dodgers do. And they had a plan up there. I mean, they didn't really get like the quote unquote big hit or like big 3-run homer. I thought the ball that Kike hit with the bases loaded that ended up being a sac fly. I looked it up. It was only like, you know, 98 miles an hour off the bat, but
yeah,
on TV, it looked like he demolished it. So I was noticing that throughout the game, like every fly ball, every ball that was hard hit that was in the air just died out there. I don't know if the ball is dead again or it had something to do with the dome that they were playing in. I have no idea, but it felt like every ball that was hit was just an out, a fly ball out. So when our pitchers are on the mound and the Padres looked like they got a hold of one or looked like they hit it hard, I was not worried because I knew that the ball was just going to die out there. But the Dodgers did a great job of kind of like picking their spots. I mean, the Gavin Lux, you know, ground ball through Cronenworth's glove. I mean, that was, you know, kind of the baseball gods were smiling down on us for that play. Kind of a bizarre play. The ball wasn't even hit hard at all. And it just broke his glove. And then for Mookie Betts to put the ball in play to the left side, got it through the hole at short. And then Shohei with his first RBI as a Dodger. It was beautiful.
Yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts right now. Game one of what will hopefully be, 1,000-something of Shohei Ohtani with the Dodgers. In the books, Shohei Ohtani officially played his first game with the Dodgers. What were your overall impressions with Shohei Ohtani this morning?
I mean, just the – obviously, we're just scratching the surface of what it's going to be like with him in the lineup every single day. But, I mean – he got that great hit off Yu Darvish. It was a you know, kind of top of the zone fastball that he just crushed into right field. That was cool. We saw his speed on display. He stole a base. His clutch ability. He knocked in a run late in the game. A little base running mishap, but other than that, was incredible. What did you think?
Yeah, he met all the expectations today. The steal you mentioned, he was fast. I think he could have grounded into a double play, but because of the speed, he was able to beat out the throw, get on base, and then, yeah, he drove in a run. So he's hitting 400 with the Dodgers. He just looked really great out there. And the big play that wasn't a play, 119 miles per hour exit velocity off the bat for a foul ball. We had sound effects from the Korea stadium PA system where they made it sound like a window shattered, which was pretty funny just because Shohei Ohtani hit it so hard and you could kind of hear it, I think, hit off the side of the dome or whatever on the right field side. And then his first base hit with the Dodgers was 112 miles per hour. So that kind of just goes to show you he's hitting the ball this hard and he's not even in mid-season form yet. So we just kind of have to wait. You know, he had to slowly ramp up to begin the season, and he started to play more and more at games and at bats as spring training progressed. And I think by the time we're talking summer, when there's more heat in the atmosphere and there's less, humidity or not. What is the word I'm looking for? When there's less when there's less like layer, I guess, that keeps the ball down because it's colder outside,
the ball's gonna be layer? Flying.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know he's in Korea right now, but like when it actually gets warmer outside and when he's not in indoor situations like this, if he's hitting the ball that hard, they're going to go flying over the wall.
Yeah. And that ball, I mean, if he straightened it out, it would have been an easy home run. I mean, that ball was absolutely murdered. What'd you think of the defense? Mookie Betts at shortstop, Gavin Lux at second, looked pretty solid in game one.
Defense was clean. They weren't asked to really make any difficult plays today, so the tests are still out there, but Mookie Betts held it down at shortstop. Gavin Lux made better throws today and cleanly fielded everything that was hit his way. Max Muncy looked really good at the third base position. There was one play that I noted earlier where it was with two runners on, and it was I don't remember who hit it, but it was in the direction of Muncy and Glasnow, and Glasnow was the one that decided to field it, but that probably should have been Max Muncy's ball. And if you let Max Muncy field that one out, he probably throws out the runner heading to first base. That was why the bases got loaded. But then, like you mentioned, Glasnow got out of it anyways with only one run scoring, which was huge. But yeah, that was really the only hiccup. But besides that, it was flawless.
And I'm sorry to call you on this, Kev, but you made the claim that Gavin Lux was not going to make the plane ride to Korea and he wasn't going to make the opening day roster. It looks like both of those things happened. So what do you got to say about that?
I was definitely wrong about Gavin Lux not being in the lineup. I thought he would probably start his way out in Oklahoma City to clean some things up in the infield, but I'm still not entirely convinced that the Dodgers are going to roll with Mookie Betts all season long at shortstop, and I'm willing to die on that hill, and if I'm wrong, then so be it. I still think that they are going to want to work something out and figure out a shortstop, and earlier this week, they asked Andrew Friedman kind of what his thoughts were on the shortstop position, and for now, they're going to ride with Mookie Betts, but he did make a note that Lux will have to be reevaluated in the offseason if he is going to play shortstop. So any talks of Gavin Lux probably playing shortstop for the Dodgers at any point this season aren't going to happen. So to me, for now, I guess it's just going to boil down to, is Mookie Betts the shortstop?
Yeah, I mean, at least for the first half of the season, he will be. And yeah. I think that, you know, once you get Miguel Rojas in there, maybe they'll move Betts over to second, or put him back in the outfield. But I don't know if I want Mookie Betts moving around the diamond as much, you know, this season as he did last season. But, you know, with Gavin Lux not being able to kind of hold it down at short, it sort of is like, well, they don't really have a choice. Yep. So when Rojas does come into play, you're not going to take Betts out of the lineup. So you're going to have to shift him over.
Yeah. So we're just going to have to see what happens. Shortstop is a really demanding position, and that wear and tear that could be on someone that didn't prep for it all offseason does still kind of concern me. So it's just a wait and see. And the one thing that I did note to you, I should say, in our text chat, that the Padres really implemented today was just a plethora of lefty after lefty coming out of the bullpen. And honestly, the Dodgers, it kind of was something that I didn't really have much of a concern about heading into the season. But now that I do see it more in play, the Dodgers need to find or have some right-handed bats step up for them, because there's a major disadvantage with Gavin Lux. He's so far in his career not been able to demonstrate hitting lefties. Max Muncy in the past was able to hit lefties, but I don't really know how effective he's been against left-handed pitchers more as of late. Jason Hayward is an automatic pinch hit situation. So that's where Kike and Taylor will come into play. And if you do have Miguel Rojas come into the games, he's going to have to step up and start hitting lefties at least.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that's the blueprint for what we might see throughout the season now, is that if teams have as many, and by the way, how many freaking lefties do the Padres have? It's like crazy. There was like a freaking clown car of lefties just coming out of nowhere. That's going to be the blueprint the rest of the year for the Dodgers. They're going to see a lot of left-handed pitching, and they're going to have to, like you said, they're lefty killers. Teoscar Hernandez, Kike Hernandez, Chris Taylor, Mookie Betts, Will Smith, the right-handed bats are going to have to step up. But I also noticed in this game, which was kind of interesting, is that Mike Schilt, the manager of the Padres, was managing like it was a playoff game. I mean, he made so many pitching moves, so many bullpen decisions. And it looked like all of them were kind of working.
Yeah.
Until he brought in Morahone, who had a 7 ERA last year. Yeah. And that's when the game really fell off. And I was surprised because he had Robert Suarez warming up. But I assume Suarez is their closer, right?
Yeah, he's their closer. I think they're very high on Morahone. I think that 70 RA is something you have to like throw out the window because it was a small sample size and he was coming off Tommy John, I think. But I didn't follow the Padres that closely this spring to know if like Morahone is who they really wanted to bring in as their eighth inning guy. I felt like Peralta, who they signed from the Yankees, I think he's kind of like one of their high leverage guys. And
well, Matt Stewie too. That guy's so really good.
I was about to get into him too. So first of all, I didn't even know he was a lefty. So like you said, just tons of lefties. And it's all a blur for me because of just the time right now. I can't remember who Matsui faced, but I felt like they brought him into the game too early as well.
They did. Did he face the heart of the order?
That's what I'm saying. I don't remember. It's such a blur
for me. I can't remember either. But yeah, I felt like they should have used those guys later and maybe used Morahone maybe earlier on, but
yeah,
whatever. I mean, the Padres offense just didn't do anything. And I think that's going to be an issue for them this year.
Yeah. Especially when you have Jake Cronenworth batting third,
right? You got Cronenworth batting third. You got Tyler Wade in the lineup. I don't know what they're doing, but it's going to be tough for them to score runs. I mean, if Machado and Bogarts are not producing and Ha-Seong Kim is not producing, then what do they have really? I mean, they desperately need another bat if they can find it. JD Martinez is still out there. I mean, they should go out and get someone like that.
Yeah. I don't know how JD Martinez isn't even on their radar if Manny Machado is their DH. I know that he's recovering from the elbow surgery, so he might be limited, and that's why they can't add JD Martinez. But, I mean, even so, you could just throw JD in left field in the meantime because he's a huge upgrade over Profar.
Absolutely. Oh, I forgot about Profar. I mean, Jesus. I did I did tweet out something during the game, which I've been on my entire life, it seems, but the Austin Barnes bunting with less than two outs to move the runners over. We saw Jerks and Profar do that. Now he ended up getting on base because the bunt was so good, but it wasn't really like a bunt for hit situation. I think he was trying to give himself up, but I felt like that's a situation where I could see if Austin Barnes was starting, that would be an ideal spot for him to bunt guys over. Mm-hmm. And it worked. And Profar is a good bunter. But yeah, I mean, just looking at this Padres lineup, it doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, we'll talk about more of our thoughts on the NL West, I guess, next week when we do a deeper dive into kind of what we're looking ahead into 2024. But yeah, the Padres offense was really not that impressive today, and their defense was bad. I'm looking at the screen right now. They had two errors. I know, was it Cronenworth they gave an error, even though it was his glove? But yeah.
Yeah.
Good morning, Steve Moore. Thank you for tuning in, loyal fan, cooking some bacon. I'll be going back to sleep pretty soon and then getting ready for work. But I want to get as many people's comments and questions in ASAP, since we're probably going to be logging off within the next 20 minutes or so. So hit your questions right now in the chat. We'll make sure to get to those. Jake, I wanted to ask you a couple things. First of all, I don't know if you saw it before the game last night. There was a bomb threat.
Yeah.
What do you think of that?
That was crazy, but I saw that it turned out to not be credible, or right?
Like, yeah,
it turned out not.
It ended up being nothing.
Being nothing. So, I mean, it's just when you've got high profile players in a new country, Major League Baseball's there. There's a lot of attention being paid to these guys. So, I mean, you know, attentions are going to be high. They're going to be on high alert, and obviously, they got to take everything seriously, which it sounds like they did. They investigated it fully, and you know, there was no reason to delay the game or cancel the game today. So, you know, all good on that front.
Yeah, so I agree. So breaking news here on the Incline. If you don't follow me on Instagram, you have no idea what I'm about to do, but I want to announce that I wasn't watching this game alone tonight. The Incline has officially added a fourth member to the team.
Oh, you got a dog.
Here is my new buddy. This is Clover.
Clover!
He's an English cream golden retriever, and he's already a pretty big Dodgers fan. He was doing his best to watch the game, but the little guy is just adjusting to life right now, and the time change was a little too much for him, but he stayed with me the entire game, and I think he's a Dodger fan.
He's adorable. How did you come to the name Clover?
So my mother-in-law helped come up with it. Basically, the backstory is, in his litter, each dog had a color collar to, you know, distinguish who's who, and he was green. He was the green collar, and then we didn't have a name for him for a little bit, so we were just calling him Green Boy. And we picked him up on St. Patrick's Day. So came to the name Clover, even though we're not Irish or anything along that like that. We did name the dog Roy. His name's Clover. We have a question from I'm Hero. Is Barnes going to start the next game? That's actually not a crazy question.
Well, I mean, he has been catching Yamamoto a lot this spring, so it might be we might see Barnes, but I don't know. What do you think?
I think they might. I don't know. I think they want to keep Will Smith fresh, and didn't he start the other exhibition games? I think he did. I think he caught the previous two.
Yeah, Will Smith or Barnes.
Yeah. Will Smith. they might just say F it and they might go with Barnes just because the way that this is lined up right now is kind of weird. But at the same time, they very well might just start Smith since I think they are going to fly back and they have some time off anyways. So it could go either way. It is honestly a complete coin flip, like with what the Dodgers do.
I mean, consistency wise, I would like to see Will Smith back in the lineup just because I want to keep the rhythm going, the momentum off this win, you know, just to get that lineup to gel. I mean, I know it's kind of hard because they're they're going to complete this game tomorrow and then fly back and then have more exhibition games, which is just the weirdest thing ever. But,
yeah,
you know, so it's hard to get the rhythm in, and they got the flight and the jet lag and all that. So, yeah, I mean, it could go either way. It's not that big of a deal to have Austin Barnes catch, especially if, you know, they're going to establish that he is, quote unquote, Yamamoto's catcher. So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I don't think Yamamoto is going to have Barnes be his catcher.
The way that Barnes hits the baseball or doesn't hit it, let's say, I mean, it would behoove Yamamoto to get comfortable with Will Smith.
Yeah. And they didn't even have great chemistry in spring training, Barnes and Yamamoto. What I was actually mentioning kind of at the top of the hour in this podcast, when looking ahead to Yamamoto making his Dodgers debut, I probably would sleep in tomorrow, or I should say not sleep in, I sleep, normally sleep, if Yamamoto wasn't pitching, but I can't miss him perform.
I had the same thought too. I was like, man, maybe it's just a one and done for me. But then I was like, oh man, I got to see Yamamoto pitch.
Yeah. If it was Bobby Miller, I'd probably go to sleep.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yamamoto.
James Paxton, I'm not.
Yeah. I got to watch it. But he had insane bad luck going against him in spring training. Like, his batted balls in play was like above 500, which is absurd. Just means that every ball that was put into play went against him pretty much, when a lot of those base hits were like pretty much soft contact. Some of them just kind of snuck through, normally would be outs. But yeah, I think Yamamoto is going to really dial it in tomorrow. I think now that the games are going to count, we're going to see him deliver. Kind of expecting the same thing with what they did with Glass now tonight, probably limit him to no more than 80 pitches. That seems to be the trend. I was actually surprised and didn't even think that Yu Darvish would get hooked that early, but kind of in hindsight, it makes a lot of sense to me just because
the pitch count was getting up there.
Yeah. They took him out at 72 pitches, but I mean, it's a long season, the way that these injuries just stockpile against pitchers, and he had to ramp up probably earlier than he's accustomed to. It made sense for both these guys to kind of have a shorter leash.
We also could never really hit him. Like, we really stack the deck against him. We get him on the ropes, but we can never knock him out. We never are able to like really break through against him. And he's a great pitcher. I mean, he has just dominant, filthy stuff. And our hitters just cannot do anything with it. And the only reason we were able to get anything going against them is because, like you mentioned, we had so many walks, but we weren't able to cash in because we couldn't hit. I mean, Max Muncy struck out with the bases loaded. I mean, he struck out twice. Yeah. The second time wasn't against Darvish, I don't believe, but the first time was against Darvish with the bases loaded. We just couldn't get a hit. So Darvish looked pretty good, even though he didn't pitch that long in that game. Mm-hmm. Kevin, what did you think about the like the stadium? I mean, obviously we weren't there, but like, just, you know, the atmosphere, the cheerleaders, the broadcast. I don't know if you watch Joe or Oral or the ESPN broadcast. Oh,
we already went into this. I did not give ESPN a chance.
Yeah, I don't. I they're not Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez. I watched the ESPN broadcast.
Oh, you did?
Carl Ravitch and Eduardo Perez. They're just not it. They're not it. They're not interesting to listen to. They're not really that funny. I kind of just tuned them out, to be honest.
Yeah, I went local. To answer your question, I thought the atmosphere was awesome. The cheerleaders was fun. I saw the Friar mascot dancing with the cheerleaders throughout the game. I definitely was catching eye when they would show in the stands like what people were eating. The food looked pretty incredible, I must say. Much better than what they serve at Dodger Stadium, which an article came out recently. I think Dodgers were like bottom five for sure. I can't remember if they were 29th or like 27th in terms of like stadium food options, which is a disgrace. But yeah, crowd's going to be different out there just because of cultural things, but they seemed into it. Stadium itself was aesthetically pleasing to look at as well. So I was impressed. I think that Korea knocked it out of the park.
Yeah. I love the constant noise throughout the game. I love that. I mean, it's just, they're so locked in. They're so excited for everything. I mean, I just love that. I remember watching a Japan versus Korea matchup in the World Baseball Classic years ago when it was at Dodger Stadium. I think it was the first year that they had it was like 2009. And from start to finish, it was just loud. And that was like when remember the vuvuzelas came onto the market, those big horns, that it was just loud the entire game. So I can only imagine what it was like in Korea this time around. I was a little surprised though, that it wasn't like sold out and like every seat was filled, but,
was it because the prices were absurd?
I don't know. I mean, I just saw a lot of empty seats. That's all. But I mean,
maybe scalpers fucked everyone over.
Yeah. The crowd was great though. I mean, and I love the cheerleaders. I mean, that's really, really fun. And it keeps people engaged. Love the cutaways to Shohei's wife, you know, like,
yeah,
you know,
she was into it,
living and dying with every at bat and being excited when he got a hit. That was really cool to see those cutaways. Did you see the reunion? No pun intended, but maybe pun is intended. Ryu? The reunion between Ryu and Dave Roberts.
Love that. I noticed that they gave him like some type of gift basket or gift bag on his way out as well in the dugout. Yeah. So there probably were other guests, but yeah, love that. Love that Ryu was able to make it. He's going to be pitching in the KBO for the next 8 years, signed a pretty big contract out there. So that was cool to see. Roberts looked really thrilled to see him as well. So
he always,
they embraced the hug. My biggest question with the Shohei Ohtani wife situation, where she lives in SoCal, right? Like she hides in SoCal.
You're asking the wrong person.
I know. Like,
I would assume
you won't know. And I won't know until we see it. Is she going to be at the home games in Los Angeles?
We didn't see her. I don't know how long they've been even dating. So we didn't see her at Angels games. She was. And I mean, I don't watch all the Angels.
Yeah.
Games, I don't know, but
I'll be able to know this in a couple weeks or so.
People seem to be surprised to find out who she actually was. Yeah. So I would assume that she wasn't at the Angels games.
Right.
But now that we know who she is, a big time basketball player.
Yep.
I would assume that she would go to the home games and I also would assume that they do live together.
Yeah. If I guess it just depends. She'll be in LA obviously at some point, but I don't know if she goes back and forth between Japan and the States often or where she's normally located. But if she is at Dodger Stadium and we find out, if I was an Angels fan, I would be like absolutely pissed knowing that Ohtani was like hiding all these things and never felt comfortable enough to just kind of show off his entire life. And then the moment he comes to the Dodgers, now all of a sudden he opens up. That would kind of rub me the wrong way as an Angels fan.
I mean, maybe, but what would rub me the wrong way even more is the fact that they didn't build a team around him and they, you know, they kind of just wasted 6 years of his career. I mean, that's what I would be more upset about than him, you know, keeping his private life private.
That's also very fair. They just made a lot of bad moves. So probably got 10 minutes left here so we can go back to sleep. So everyone that's following along in the chat, you need to get your questions in right now, or if you have any comments, we'll start to read those off before we log off. But before we do that, Jake, there were some injuries announced, and I wanted to get your thoughts. Gratterall to the IL. He's dealing with some shoulder inflammation, and they're saying that's a cause of the hip injury that he was dealing with. Emmett Sheehan is on the IL with forearm inflammation, and Blake Treinen is going to the IL as a result of the rib contusion or bruised lung that he suffered, which I think of the three, the Treinen is the least serious, so I'm not too concerned about that. The Gratterall shoulder one isn't really that encouraging, though, because he's dealt with shoulder issues in the past. But I'm optimistic they'll have that one under control.
The Sheehan one worries me the
Sheehan,
most.
Yeah, the Sheehan one is the one that I think gives me the most concern.
That could be TJ, right?
Usually it's a precursor. That's kind of what happened to Tony Gonsolin. He had the forearm tightness, which is worse than inflammation, I guess. I don't really know where inflammation ranks, but I imagine he'll be out at least a month minimum. So it's
it's not good for Emmett Sheehan. That is really not good. Gratterall concerns me only because he is injury prone. He's had dealt with a lot of injuries in the past, so that does concern me. Blake Treinen concerns me the least, like you mentioned. I think that they're just being cautious with him. Which is fine because as we saw tonight, there's a bridge to Phillips. I mean, there really is. Even without Gratterall and Treinen, you can get to Phillips, and they figured it out. I mean, if Joe Kelly can be as effective as we know Joe Kelly can be, then the bridge is fine because you got Brazier and Hudson, and you got Phillips and Joe Kelly. So I think that they can weather the storm and allow Gratterall to have a full recovery comeback, hopefully. Same with Blake Treinen. But in terms of Emmett Sheehan, I don't know. I mean, I hope for the best, but whenever you hear like forearm inflammation or elbow inflammation or anything like that, it's usually not good.
Not good. Dred Scott got him saying Lux throwing a couple strikes to Freddie. Yes, he did.
That was encouraging. Big double play that they turned in that inning that I mentioned earlier with Glasnow. Lux was involved in that, so that was huge.
We've got Justin Yamas saying, I can't wait to see them face checkbook baseball on opening day. I'm guessing that's a shade at Miles Mikolas for his comments.
Yeah, because Mikolas, they said he's going to be the opening day starter for the Cardinals. Yes. It just goes to show you that, you know, as everyone's been pointing out, like Mookie Betts was right. The Dodgers are going to get everyone's best. And similarly, like, you know, I know you and I have followed the Lakers all season long. It's like every time anyone faces the Lakers, not only do the stars that have been injured suddenly get healthy again, but the role players become Reggie Miller behind the 3-point line. I mean, that's what happens when, you know, the Dodgers go out and make all those moves, is that the target is on their back. But, you know, you could argue that the target's been on their back for years now, even and the target's been there, but maybe the target's even, you know, has grown in size, you know, because of the additions of Yamamoto, Shohei and Glasnow and so on and so forth. So yeah,
the entire NL West has responded outside of the Rockies to the Dodgers.
Yeah, Giants, I mean, it's just
Added Blake Snell, traded for Robbie Ray, two big lefties when they're on their game. Mentioned how the Padres signed a bunch of left-handed relievers, and then Arizona, they signed Erod, who's already injured, and they've added Jock Peterson, probably just to spite the Dodgers. So, kind of to your point.
Yeah, and the thing about Michaelis's comments that are just kind of weird is that, you know, because he pointed out that the Cardinals aren't a small budget team, but that they have these sort of Midwestern like farmers that are going to come together, and you know they're gritty and whatever. And it's like, look, you know, franchises across Major League Baseball could spend a ton of money if they really wanted to, and we know this because we've seen the Mets spend a shit ton of money badly but they've spent money. And the Angels, another example, they've spent money, but very badly. So all these owners have the ability to spend money. The problem is that they don't know what to do with the money. And the Dodgers are like a well-oiled machine and are just better at maximizing the talent that they acquire and the drafts and the draft picks that they have, the development that they have. So to me, the whole thing about how it's checkbook baseball, it's like, you know, St. Louis, you could play checkbook baseball too if you wanted to.
They like, do.
It's just a dumb argument.
They already do. They're like top 10 in payroll. They're not even that far behind the Dodgers. And these comments are coming from a guy who's making anywhere between $16 to $20 million a year on average based off his contract right. structure. And he's putting up a 5 ERA. They paid Wilson Contreras, I think, some of the top money in baseball for a catcher. They've got Goldschmidt, who's paid very hefty. He's a Hall Arenado. Of Fame first baseman. Arenado at third, Hall of Fame third baseman. And
they also get Sonny Gray.
They just paid Sonny Gray. They've paid a decent amount of guys. So just ridiculous. I don't know what world Michaelis is living in right now, but hopefully he gets shelled on opening day.
I would love that.
This is a guy that went from proclaiming himself as the Lizard King because he ate a lizard in Korea, I think, to now he's just wants to be Farmer Boy. Like, Crimea River, Miles, whatever. All right. Well, we're almost out of time, Jake. What are your final thoughts? What are you looking forward to tomorrow? Well, we're going to wrap this up.
I'm looking forward to seeing how Yamamoto looks. I mean, that's the big draw. That's the only reason why I'm probably going to get up again to watch another Dodger game at 3 a.m. Watching an entire game in the pitch dark and my eyes were burning throughout. So I'm ready. I'm ready to do it again. I really am. None of my friends that are not as diehard Dodgers fans or not Dodgers fans at all, like, don't understand why we would wake up this early. Even our third co-host does not understand why we would do this. So we do it for the love of the game. I mean, this is a once in a lifetime kind of thing to watch our team play in Korea, you know, on a big stage like that, and to watch these players that we have been, you know, hyping up all off season, we're getting to see them in real action when the games start to count. So I'm looking forward to Yamamoto, and seeing how he can carve up this Padres lineup, which I wasn't impressed with.
Padres did look pretty flat today. The Dodgers pitching looked very on. But yeah, I agree with you. I'm also very much looking forward to watching Yamamoto make his Dodgers debut. This is going to be monumental for the 25-year-old who just signed that huge contract with the Dodgers. And I want to see us do better with runners in scoring position. Like I mentioned a half hour ago or so, they went 2-for-14 tonight. They had a lot of opportunities. They could have punched Darvish out. They had some of the relievers on the ropes as well and finally broke through in the eighth inning. So let's see Max Muncy do better with guys on base. Teoscar, I think Teoscar is going to break out. I feel like he's going to hit the first home run in Korea.
That'd be sick. He got a hit tonight, so that's good.
So that's my prediction. Teoscar Hernandez goes yard game two.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's a good place to end the show. Thank you guys for watching another episode of the Inclined Dodgers podcast. We'll be back probably next week when we do our official preview, dive into the Dodgers, kind of what we're looking forward to in 2024, and talk about the rest of Major League Baseball. Anything else, Jake?
Nope. I'm going back to bed.
All right. We're going back to bed. Thank you, everyone. Anyone that stayed up to watch that game from first pitch through the end, you are a loyal Dodger fan, so you can pat yourself on the back. Good morning, everyone. Or if you're listening later on, good night. And make sure you're subscribing to the Inclined Dodgers podcast, whether it's on the audio feed or on YouTube. But we're out.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Let the fresh air in and keep the bugs out with replacement screen for your doors and windows from AdForce. It's easy to install, durable against the elements, and comes in a variety of types to suit your needs. Repair your screens today with a roll of replacement screen on sale through May 5th. And check out more great deals happening now in our weekly flyer on Menards.com.
Save big.